This is the Day Zero update for September 10th, 2017. I'm Football Alpha.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
And I'm Brandon Perkins.
And to all our listeners who are in the affected hurricane areas, stay safe. We want you to continue to be our listeners. So, yeah, batten down the hatches and get ready to weather the storm because, yeah, it's a nasty one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, other than, you know, turbulent weather, this week's been kind of quiet.
Right. It's getting ready for it's the first couple weeks before the holiday.
Yeah, holiday rush, and the releases are starting to come out. Madden is out, so now all of the floodgates are open, so... I expect we'll have a lot to talk about in the coming weeks, but for now, it's a little bit sparse, but we still got a few things. Yeah. As far as what we've been playing, well, kind of the same old for me. Tekken 7, Diablo 3, Defense Grid, been playing a little bit of Street Fighter Alpha 2, because that's always awesome.
Mm. Oh, on Fightcade or PS3?
It was actually just the ROM on MAME, so...
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a good game. I kind of wish they would do a HD remaster of that.
Yes.
Yeah, so.
The rumor's still out there.
Yeah.
There's talk that at Capcom Cup we're going to hear about online-enabled re-releases of Street Fighter Anniversary Collection and Street Fighter Alpha Anthology.
Hmm.
Which would be amazing because Alpha Anthology never had an online enabled version.
No, that was on PS2, and
they just dropped it on PS2 and let it be.
Yeah, so that's been kind of my week. But how about you, Pat?
I've been sticking to my standbys as well. Street Fighter V. I'm kind of revisiting from the perspective that I'm not. I don't really look at any character as a main at the moment. So I'm kind of going back to square one and just evaluating the roster as a whole and, you know, going from there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure where that's going to leave me, but it's going to be really interesting to see. Because, surprisingly enough, Street Fighter V has quite a lot of meat on its bones at this point.
Yeah.
And there's quite a bit to choose from already. Not a year and a half into the game's lifespan.
Yeah. How are you liking Manat, by the way?
I still like her quite a bit. I don't know how well I would say yoga drills mesh with having a normal jump speed.
Mm.
But, you know, she's the first example that I've seen in a long time of a Street Fighter V character that... you know, based on one of Daigo's complaints in recent memory, that actually lets players express themselves through their play style.
Mm.
Manat sure as hell allows you to do that.
Yeah.
So that's a step in the right direction, and I hope that, you know, we can continue that momentum as we go into Capcom Cup and Season 3.
Yeah.
So, Tekken 7 I've been playing probably not as much as I should.
Hmm.
But, you know... I'm still at Grandmaster, so I'm happy about that. I'm probably going to be stuck there for a little while, but I did dip back into Brawler for a minute.
Hmm.
So, continuing a slow trend upward.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there is always Stormblood.
Yeah.
And there will always be Stormblood until the next expansion comes out. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I am just... I'm sold on playing Final Fantasy XIV for its entire run now. There's very little that I can imagine they would do that would push me away from the game at this point.
Yeah.
So that's been my week.
All right.
I am, Final Fantasy XIV as well. I am now hip deep into Heaven's Ward.
Nice.
I am now at the point where I am infiltrating the Nath,
Oh, that fucking...
Yeah.
Yeah. The ant colony.
Yeah, and, It sucks.
They don't fuck around there.
Yeah, they've kicked my ass at least 3 times now. And I also had to go through that point where I've had to go through that point again where now you have to do some side quests to up your level before you can do another main scenario quest. So,
have you fought their primal yet?
No, I have not. But I've heard he's a beast.
That's actually one of the funner battles in Heaven's Ward, I think.
Yeah.
Like, he won't rip your guts out, but there are some mechanics that you have to pay attention to. I like it when Final Fantasy XIV shows off its battle design chops.
Mm-hmm.
And you definitely get that with Ravana.
Yeah. But, yeah, so I still got to do that. But after that, I am also, of course, playing E6, you know, Arkham Nepishtim, because
E8
comes out Tuesday. Yes. Yeah. But yeah, so yeah, again, that is one of the most fun action RPGs I've ever played.
It's Zelda on space drugs.
Yeah, and it's very satisfying. The combat in E6 is very satisfying.
There's a reason they started going back and redeveloping all the past games in that image.
Yeah.
It's just they give you plenty of enemies to fight, and it's, you know, you just, it's almost an OCD thing. You want to, you know, fight every single one of them and watch them explode into gooey chunks, because that's exactly what they do.
Yeah.
Yep.
Giblets.
Yeah, someone at Falcom was in a pretty bad place right around that time. Mm-hmm. Just,
yeah.
Like, well, this isn't kind of what I expected from my lighthearted action RPG, but we'll roll with it.
Yeah.
Yep.
But, yeah, that's what I've been playing.
Cool.
Of course, when East 8 comes out Tuesday, I'm probably going to be putting Final Fantasy XIV aside for a little while I'm going through that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I might catch up on your server.
Yeah. So, but yeah, at this point, we'd probably be talking about Destiny 2, but Chris, who's probably, I think, the only one who's actually put some significant time into it, is at work. So, yeah, we couldn't be here. So I will save that for next week when he...
What we do know, however, is that it is definitely better than its predecessor.
Yeah, far, far.
How much does that say, though?
Well, it says that they actually made a cohesive game, so that's a good thing at least. But yeah, we'll get into a lot of that detail with Chris once he gets back, probably next week. So look forward to that. You can also probably listen to Friday's episode of Let's Weekend, because he talked about it a bit there as well. Yeah. So keep that in mind. To move on to the show, let's get on to the shrapnel, and we're going to follow up with the whole Shadow of War story, which is a gift that just keeps on giving.
Oh, yeah.
Because apparently WB just can't do anything right. They took what was probably going to be just a little homage to series producer Michael Forgey and turned it into a colossal...
Cash grab,
yeah. They could have, you know, they're selling basically an Orc Slayer character. He's basically kind of like a guardian angel that will just like show up, kick ass, and then leave.
Yeah,
if you're in trouble, and he'll do that. So he's on sale as DLC for $5. And the thing is, it was supposed to be charity DLC. So. Yeah, $350 of that would have gone to charity, and then the other $150 would have gone to, well, the platform holders, because they suck. And they take a cut. Except for one small thing. If you're going to do split donations like that, in some states that's not allowed.
Yeah.
So all of the money would go to Warner Brothers. And yeah.
And how much you want to bet that they actually know that?
Yes, I'm sure they actually, well, I don't know. I don't know if they actually knew that or if they're just so incompetent at this point that they just thought they'd get away with it. I mean, really?
Based on their track record, I don't think we can give them the plausible deniability there.
No. I'm thinking it probably was deliberate, and I'm just
trying to give
them credit.
This is, at best, a bad look for them.
Yeah, and especially since there would have been much better ways to do it, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, they could have had the, they just could have had the $5 DLC, and then they could have price matched, all of the purchases that they got for that DLC and price matched it to Michael Forgey's GoFundMe.
Yes.
That would have been one thing that they could have done, but
mm-hmm.
no, and they didn't do that. They just went for the most convoluted, most just
high
broken
yield
method possible. Yeah. Yeah.
Because the method that you suggest would not permit them to skim so much off the top.
No. Wouldn't exactly permit them to skim anything off the top. Maybe they'd have to match all their sales with donations. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah. So that's unfortunate that something that could have been a nice gesture turned into just
yes.
shit.
yeah. A cynical cash grab.
Yeah. Yeah, but at this point, Shadow of War is dead to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'll play the first one. I'm gonna probably enjoy that game quite a bit, but they've basically ruined that sequel for me. So
yeah,
I will vote with my wallet and just avoid it. So that's Shadow of War. We'll move on to.
We'll follow the story as long as it continues to amuse us.
And the game launches in about a month, so there's plenty more opportunities.
It's going to stop there.
Yeah, for Warner Brothers to cock it up. So, speaking of cock-ups, retailers have accidentally leaked what could be the Shenmue collection.
Shenmue 1 and 2 for PS4 and Xbox One that Sega still hasn't announced yet, but everyone somehow knows about.
Yeah, it's like the worst kept secret.
yeah.
We know because Shenmue 3 is coming. We know they basically have to.
Yeah, they basically have to, and they're working with Suzuki, so to kind of coordinate those things. You wouldn't do that. You wouldn't do a 1 and 2.
Well, it would be stupid to not do this and have it set up in such a way that you could transfer your saves over to Shenmue 3.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of on the hook to deliver this.
Yeah.
So. Or lest they undercut the game that, all these people have wanted for quite some time.
Yeah, because I think that's what a lot of people forget. The whole thing originally with the Shenmue trilogy was that, you were supposed to be able to transfer your saves from one game to the next.
Yeah.
But that didn't end up happening because, unfortunately, the first game came out on a certain console that we're going to be talking about later, and then the second one ended up on the Xbox. So,
unless you were in Europe, in which case you did get both of them.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyways. But, yeah, it looks like the collection is an actual thing, and I'll probably be
good.
Yeah, it's good. It's one more game I probably won't be able to afford, so yeah, that's a lot of fun going on in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And what else we got here? Well, it looks like Trails of Cold Steel is selling pretty damn well.
And keep in mind, this is still before the launch of Cold Steel 3. But the first two games in the series alone have now topped 1 million sales globally. The franchise is looking really good right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's 1 million. How much did Bravely Default sell when it came out over here?
About 250,000.
Yeah. That's there's two Trails of Cold Steel games that are out now, so hypothetically that's 500,000 per game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah, that is very... That is impressive, by especially by JRPG standards.
Yeah, and very encouraging, too.
Yep.
So, you know, it means that Falcom has, you know, continued impetus to keep bringing them over, because they're going to keep selling.
And as more and more people become aware of the series, those numbers are only going to fly further north.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, and we just had a Steam release of the first game.
Yeah, and the second
that's going to play into
coming. So
second release has to come, because the first game ends on the most infuriating cliffhanger.
Would that not be the dick move to end all dick moves, though?
Yeah. Like, okay, the first Trails in the Sky did have a very bad cliffhanger, and you also had to deal with the fact of waiting, what was it, like 6 years?
Well, the original PSP release of Trails in the Sky over here was 2011.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, 2011, and I think the PC version was 2013, and then 2014. Second chapter, 2014, and then, yeah, 2 years after that came SC.
No, still a pretty long time. Yeah.
So,
but even that, you know, at least in that case, the first game ends on... the cliffhanger isn't quite as bad, because it has, like, a sort of... not necessarily conclusive ending, but, like, a lot of the...
The good guys won for now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That doesn't... Not with the first Cold Steel game. It basically ends, like, it's, like, the most infuriating way possible. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah. Because, like, I you know, the Trails of Cold Steel 2 was already out when I was playing the first Cold Steel. And, like, basically I finished Cold Steel, and, like, immediately the next day I had to go to GameStop and get the second one.
Yeah. And if it hadn't ended on such a cliffhanger, you probably would have been able to put some space between them. But
you're imagining having or not having that luxury.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you're a PC player right now, you don't have that luxury.
Yeah.
Yeah. So... yeah, but it's, you know, it's heartening. I like seeing all of these cool JRPGs showing up, so that's great.
And I can't wait to see what those numbers are going to look like after we finally get Trails to Zero and Trails of Azure announced, which by all accounts are the best games in the series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
And they're coming. I mean, we pretty much know they are.
Yeah. Well, they exist. They're just going to be localized, so.
The only way they wouldn't is if XSEED suddenly decided they hate money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't think XSEED hates money, so yeah, mm-hmm. I think those are going to happen. So, moving on in our last little item of news in the Shrapnel section, we got an announcement of Kamen Rider Climax Fighters. So for you folks who like tokusatsu video games, this looks really, really good.
Yeah, Bandai clearly wants in on that Dissidia money. Based on how Kamen Rider Climax Fighters looks to play, it is only 4-player instead of 6.
Yeah.
But based on the Dissidia beta, that may well be to its credit.
Yeah, that may be better.
But I'm thrilled with the trailers that we've seen so far. I almost think that it has Katsuhiro Harada's fingerprints all over it, just based on how it's being presented.
Yeah, it does have kind of a little bit of a Tekken vibe to it, doesn't it?
I really hope they have more than just main protagonists to play as, because that would undercut this game horribly.
Yeah, I suspect they will, but you know, for the initial trailer, they probably just stuck with the folks that they knew.
The 19 quote-unquote modern main protagonists.
Yeah.
it's looking fantastic. I'm really excited, and hopefully, you know, it's not going to lead to a North American release because licensing hell.
Yeah, you can always pick it up from Amazon Japan.
Yep, and I have every intention of doing so. It will be out in December.
Yeah,
PS4, region free.
So pick that. Well, up.
All three of the consoles are region free now. So
yeah, which is smart.
Never thought I'd see that day, but I'm glad we're here.
Yeah.
rest assured I will be streaming quite a bit of it.
Yeah. Look forward
to that.
Probably be one of the few who would be streaming it, so I'll get some good views out of that, because it would be unique.
Mm.
And just really hoping that it lets me play as Kamen Rider Zangetsu or as Kamen Rider Kaiser.
Yeah.
So
cool stuff there. So let's get into our more beefy topics of the week. And the first one is that was recently discovered by Eurogamer at a press event for South Park The Fractured Butthole. I had to put a... There's a comma in there, by the way. The game has a very interesting mechanic as far as skin color goes. It's treated as a difficulty slider.
Yep. they did. This is if you play the Stick of Truth, you know, they don't fuck around when it comes to the race and ethnicity issues.
They give zero fucks.
Yeah.
If you remember in the Stick of Truth, they had what was basically a red mage class, except it was a Jew.
Yeah. So, yeah, in this case, though, it's like one of, they noticed that it said that the combat and all of it and stuff would not be any more or less difficult depending on what skin color you use.
But everything else in the game, every other aspect of your life.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just like real life. And that's really interesting in two ways. One, as far as, you know, social satire and commentary goes. But two, on a mechanical scale, now I can kind of understand why this game got delayed so often, because there's a fuck ton of permutations that they'd have to take into consideration.
Yes.
So now I'm kind of looking forward to this game,
because I can tell you from just being in the gaming world for a while, a lot of gamers out there are really in the need of getting some giving some empathy.
Yeah.
So.
And if you put them into situations that they've never been in, and they get treated differently based on factors that they may not very well be aware of, so all of a sudden it causes a little bit of introspection on, well, maybe I shouldn't treat that guy across the street that way. So
exactly.
Yeah, it's a very interesting thing that Matt and Trey have decided to implement, and that's, pretty good in this day and age. So
yeah.
Yeah.
So they said that this is a Matt and Trey decision?
Well, you know, it's definitely a Matt and Trey decision.
Yeah.
Well, it could have been Ubi.
It could have been a little bit of both. Keep in mind that... even though whatever decision that come up, Matt and Trey have veto power. So,
yeah. But yeah, now I'm going to maybe get this game for my birthday because it's coming out around that time. So that'd be fun to have. Apparently, Grand Theft Auto might have done something like this, but I haven't.
The jury's still out, but the numbers are pretty damning if you actually look at the study.
Mm-hmm.
It was carried out by Game Theory. I would have sworn somewhere they messed around with this in the multiplayer modes too.
Yeah,
but I linked in the show notes to a Kotaku article about Game Theory trying this with the three main characters and how it went. So.
Yeah. But there's definitely
something going on there.
Yeah, there's probably something going on there. This is also, I think, one of the first overt implementations of such a system. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
GTA 5 didn't cop to it either way.
No. Yeah, this calls it out. So, during character creation, should point that out.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... but yeah, that's cool. And moving on to something that's a little less cool, and it's G2A implementing loot boxes.
Mm.
So you know how everybody loves to, you know, get random crates of stuff that may or may not want?
Yeah.
Well, now you can do that with games on G2A.
So, wonderful.
Yeah, you can go there. You can, you know, run the test, the free trial or whatever it is, just to see how it's presented. And it really is as sleazy as you think it would be. It's like a kind of a sliding roulette wheel that you will go across the screen, and whatever it lands on is what you get. There are different tiers of games that will cost different amounts of loot points to have a chance of getting, and it really is about as sleazy as you think it is.
Yep.
Especially since you can't really be sure of where these keys even come from.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, I'm not a fan. Mind you, this isn't the first G2A isn't the first to do a kind of system like this. Green Man Gaming does something, but theirs is a little bit different. They don't do the whole random roulette thing wheel. They just basically say, you give us $5, you'll get three keys or three or five keys, and you have no idea what they are. Mm-hmm. So it is kind of like gambling, but it's not really presented in that fashion. It's just kind of, here's some random games. And it's like, I feel like buying random games. Okay.
It's their way of offloading shit that they would never get rid of otherwise.
Yeah, pretty much. And some of that stuff, well, it's not great. And some of it is, like diamonds in the rough. So you never really know. You guys have thoughts on these guys?
Yeah,
My opinion of G2A was established and solidified long ago.
There's
really nothing anyone can do to bring it up or drive it further below the bottom than it already is.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's
it's just fuck those guys, and we're better off. Not even, I almost wonder why we're giving this attention.
we're giving it attention to call out their shit. That's why we're giving it attention. Otherwise, I wouldn't really want to mention it or even give them the time of day. But people don't call them out,
it's true.
It ain't gonna go anywhere. So screw you, G2A, and all of your various shady affiliate sites.
Yeah.
That may or may not sell stolen Xbox Live or PlayStation Network accounts.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a thing. Anyways. And finally, on this lovely... What is it? What is the anniversary of this year? It's
18th.
18th yep. birthday. So the Dreamcast.
Sega Dreamcast.
September 9th, 1999, and is... officially old enough to drive.
Yeah. Officially old enough to drive, officially to go off and die for its country, but unfortunately it cannot drink.
It can in Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Like I said, it's still not old enough to drink.
Well, Canadian Dreamcast can drink, but none of you guys can. But yeah, so 18 years ago, I'm sure pretty much I know Pat was in line for his. I had one that day, and that particular
there
system
was no
launch,
line. That's why I remember it so fondly.
Yeah. Got mine for Christmas.
Yeah. So we all pretty much got in early. And one of the things that I remember about that particular system launch was it was remarkably smooth for the most part.
Yes.
You could just go in, get one, and walk out with the games that you actually wanted. Yep. Whether they worked when you got home was another matter, but that's, yeah.
It was a production issue with GDRs.
Yes. Early on, there were a few batches, and it was kind of random. I don't really know.
No, Midway especially got slammed, like, disproportionately.
Yeah, Midway did. Yeah, I think actually, yeah, all of Midway's games, MK Gold, Ready to Rumble, Hydro Thunder. Yeah,
there were
all
bad
had that. Yeah,
there were a ton of bad NFL Blitz 2,000 discs.
Yeah. And it was weird because it was like pressed off center, which made it really hard for the Dreamcast to read. It didn't like that very much. Let's just put it that way. I was bit by this on Sonic Adventure.
Ooh.
So yeah, that was not a good time.
See, I thought most of the Sonic Adventure discs came out pretty good.
Yeah. I had mine and it was just fine.
My Sonic Adventure was bad. My Trick Style was good, unfortunately.
Trick Style is never good, Phil.
Well, it was good in the sense that it played.
Once you load the VMU game onto your VMU, you're done with it.
Yeah, I could play Snake on it.
That's how Trick Style was supposed to work.
Unfortunately. And that was one of Criterion's first games, too. So they would go on to do much better things, but at that time it was just...
They were not good.
No, they were not that great. Mm-hmm. But the seeds of greatness was there.
Yeah.
I'd honestly like to see somebody take another crack at Trick Style, or at least a similar type of game. Because I think there's, potential there for something fun.
We need those futuristic racers.
Yeah.
Yep.
With something like that, probably really should just go just completely bananas over the top.
Other than that, how about we talk a bit about, some of those first games that came out.
Mm. Oh.
So, we already mentioned it, Sonic Adventure. That was, one of my first big ones. Obviously, if you look at it now, graphics-wise, it's better in some parts than it is in others.
Yeah, it was a little inconsistent.
Some of it was really good. Some of it was... It was. You have to remember, this was in the late '90s. This was the tail end of the '90s.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of what hasn't aged well was considered pretty cutting edge at the time.
I would say Sonic Adventure aged pretty damn well.
Yeah, I mean other than Sonic's spazzy ass talking face.
Yeah. Sonic doesn't need to talk.
That is something that could still theoretically happen today, so...
Yeah.
Well, Sonic Forces is coming out later this year, and it will still be spazzy talky fans, Sonic.
Yeah. What I loved, but honestly, there were a couple of things about Sonic Adventure I loved. One, of course, was the soundtrack.
Hmm.
It had the amazing soundtrack. It was butt rock, but it was glorious butt rock.
It's what you get with Jun Senoue.
Yeah. And of course, you had everything. You had there were obviously you had the multiple character angle where you picked your character. They had their own little story arc,
mm-hmm.
and after you finished all of them, you then had the big grand finale at the end.
Yeah.
And of course, each character had their own theme songs. The way their gameplay came out, however, depending on the character, some was better than others.
Yeah, it was kind of hit and miss.
I don't know why the hell all of Tails' stages had to be racing stages.
Yeah. That was dumb as fuck.
That made no goddamn sense at all. Why is Sonic even poking his ass into them? I don't know why.
Don't know either.
Let alone having the keys to a fail state.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then of course there was the most infamous of them all, Big the Cat.
Could you really call those levels, though? I mean, that didn't go so well, did it?
See, here's the thing. The Big the Cat stages, I actually didn't hate them back originally because I liked the music. I liked the atmosphere that went with them. I like fishing. So, mm-hmm. you know, just the sort of experience of having that lore in, you know, the water and waiting for the fish, you know, that was fine. That didn't bother me. But they did a terrible time explaining the mechanics of those stages.
Yeah.
Because if you tried to just get fucking Froggy, you know, at first, it wouldn't work. You basically, what you were supposed to do is you were supposed to get some of the other fish first. They never explained that to you, but that was what you were supposed to do, because the idea was you'd get the fish and you'd get rings, and then eventually you get Froggy, and he would eventually go for it almost immediately.
Yeah.
But if you didn't know to do that, you were basically waiting forever, and you would have things like Froggy would get up just up to the lure and maybe bite it and hold on it for like 2 seconds and then let go.
Sometimes he would come up and flip a middle finger and then swim away.
Yeah. Or sometimes he would just like press himself up against the lure and then just fucking disappear. Like, doesn't even swim away, just boom, he vanishes.
Yeah.
You know, so you get amazing sights like watching Aaron Hansen slowly but surely over 9 minutes completely lose his shit. on Game Grumps, like, and remember the stage he's doing is the beach stage, which has that god awful detuned slide guitar. You know that.
Yeah.
And so you've got, you know, he's like, Froggy, you can see it, you can want it, you can taste it, it's there. Grab it, grab it, grab it.
Ah! He just, yeah.
He's like, why?
For our entertainment, that's why.
Yeah.
But then you had, like, the regular Sonic stages, which were pretty good. You had the ones that, for whatever reason, a lot of people really hate seem to be the Knuckles stages. And honestly, I never had that big of a problem with them.
They were all right. The only thing I had issues with were the hub levels. Those just didn't seem like they had a whole hell of a lot of point.
Are we in agreement that the adventure fields were a mistake?
Yes.
Yeah, they kind of were. I mean, I appreciate the idea of them trying to create a more expansive overworld and sort of like creating this sort of atmosphere or whatever. Overall, yeah. And honestly, some of my favorite songs on that soundtrack are from the adventure fields. But
I had to repurchase them.
Yeah, but there really isn't a lot of to go along with them. And what was even worse is that some of the arbitrary ways they would block off some of the areas.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, I kind of want to go back.
Got stuck.
Yeah, and it's like
You just couldn't figure out what to do next, and you were stuck in an adventure field for 20 to 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Or if you actually got stuck.
Yeah. And it's just like the excuses they come up with is like, yeah, I kind of want to go on this train, maybe go over to that that arcade casino stage. Oh, nope, sorry. Train people are on strike.
Really? Yeah. It was
Well, that is a thing that would happen.
Yeah, that is a thing that could happen. It's just it seems like all of the random reasons for stuff to go wrong in that game happened at the same time.
Murphy's Law of the game.
Yeah. So, yeah, but
I still think it would have been better if they'd just gone Sonic 1 through 3 style and delivered you from action stage to action stage to action stage and just let you play through it that way, delivering the story as needed.
Yeah.
But
for the record, they did that with Sonic Adventure 2.
Yeah.
I still need to start that.
Yeah. Sonic Adventure 2 has probably my favorite Knuckles level of all, which is Pumpkin Hill Zone, simply because of how fucked up it is.
Okay.
It's basically a nightmarescape. It's a big, like, arid desert filled with ghosts and ghouls and, like, random-ass abandoned churches everywhere. Even, like, out in the background, you know, the pre-rendered, you know, where just you look around in the distance, there's nothing but arid desert and a couple of random-ass abandoned churches as far as the eye can see.
Yeah. And you wonder what kind of freaky shit was going on over there.
Mm-hmm. Of course, if Sonic Adventure 2 has one thing going against it, is that it introduced to the Sonic canon the most emo character of them all.
Oh, Shadow.
So let's talk about Jet Set Radio.
Well, that wasn't the launch game, so...
No.
Okay, so what else was a launch game?
Trickstyle was a launch game.
Trickstyle. I never played Trickstyle.
You're quite fortunate.
Yeah, don't do that.
Don't play that game.
Yeah. Ever. Unless you play the PC version, which is actually kind of good.
So, all right.
What else was there? Soul Calibur. That was probably one of the best games of that.
Oh, yeah. Sequel to Soul Blade.
Yeah, Soul Blade, Soul Edge, whatever you want to call
whichever
it.
Whichever medium you played it on.
Yeah.
It was probably one of the... I think that was the first and only fighting game Namco ever released on the Dreamcast.
Yeah.
You'd be right, yeah.
Yeah.
There was a rumor that they wanted to try Tekken Tag Tournament on there, but they just saved it for the PS2.
Yeah. Also, Soul Calibur answered the question, who actually beat Cervantes and got the Soul Blade?
Yeah. Yep.
Continuity!
Yeah. And it was, what was his name? Siegfried. Yeah, it was Siegfried. And he went fucking loony.
Yeah, and then turned into Nightmare.
Well, he wasn't exactly the most together guy in the continuity in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah, and Soul Calibur also had a really cool interactive intro, which was kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you could... Yeah,
move the camera.
Yeah, you can move the camera, different button points, different button presses at certain times of the intro would, like, change stuff. It was... It's kind of neat.
Yeah. It was kind of a shout-out to the endings in Soul Edge.
Yeah.
Right. Let me think. What else? Choo Choo Rocket?
That wasn't launch.
That was not quite launch. There was Hydro Thunder.
Hydro Thunder was there, which was a good arcade conversion.
Yes.
Mortal Kombat Gold, which was not.
Not. Well, it was
a bad port of a bad game.
Yeah.
Hydro Thunder, though, I mean, it's a shame that was the victim of those bad Midway discs.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that game deserved better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then, to be honest, like, yeah, even if you had a bad disc, it didn't preclude you from playing it. That's the problem.
No.
It just removed all of the music. So that was a bit of a bummer.
Uh-huh.
What else was there? Ready to Rumble. Yeah, wasn't that great of a game, but
It was really popular on the launch.
I think it was just its novelty value, honestly.
Yeah. It was kind of one of those just fun, you know, arcade boxing games that
sequel was better.
Yeah, sequel was better. Then it had Michael Jackson in it, which was fun.
Yeah. And it had Bill Clinton and Hillary.
Yeah. Yeah,
I was trying to feel your pain.
flag racing.
Yeah, that was launch. And
oh yes,
one of the more underrated games of the launch.
I should probably stream that sometime.
Yeah.
Oh, we also need to talk a little bit about, I guess, a little bit about the hardware. So, on top of the, you know, the actual console, you had the controllers, which for some reason had the cords at the bottom.
Worst design.
It made sense in context.
No, it didn't.
And then you also had the save cards.
Yeah, VMUs, which you stick into the top.
Which actually
didn't go any further than that in their concept.
Yeah, because the thing was is that they were also electronic, and you could they had ways interacting with the actual game. So, like, for example, Sonic Adventure, you had the Chows.
Yep. Yeah.
And you had a little Chow raising simulator.
Mm-hmm.
that was directly involved with EMUs.
Yeah.
Well, so you had the VMUs on the Dreamcast, and those were a hit. In Japan, at least, you had Pocket Station for the PS1, and those worked out pretty good. How did that not become more of a thing than it did? Mm. Were people just lithium battery adverse, or...?
It could be, and I think this is honest, I actually directly blame the sort of fall of the VirtuaPet fad, and that it just kind of turned a lot of people off on the idea.
Because if you looked at a VMU, that's kind of what it looked like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is a shame, because, you know, you could play a decent version of Snake on it.
Yeah, you could.
Unfortunately, you had to buy Trickstyle, but...
Or rent it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Blue Stinger.
We're never going to run out of those Trickstyle Snake jokes, are we?
No. Nope. No. It's the thing that keeps on giving.
Yes.
Also, Blue Stinger. Don't ever play that game.
Never, ever. I mean, and that right there was one of the biggest disappointments for me, because they hyped the hell out of that game.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I kept seeing, like, new preview images in the magazines, and, like, God, this game looks so awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be like Resident Evil, only it's going to be better. And then it came out, and it was like, holy, what the hell happened here?
This is shit.
Yeah.
See, I never understood that whole thing, because, I mean, I've always been from kind of outside of the horror game fandom. So from that perspective, it was like, I had never heard anything about the game until probably the month before launch, and then it was everywhere, and then the launch hit, and give it another 2 weeks to a month, and it actually started showing up in discount bins already.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is Blue Stinger was originally – yeah, I mean, Blue Stinger really was originally supposed to be a launch title.
Hmm. Well, it was.
Oh,
that may have been the problem.
Yeah, because it was the preview images for me. That was because they staged them so well.
They were bull shots.
Yeah, and they were really good bull shots. That was the problem.
Well, bull shots are always good. That's why they're bull shots.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So imagine
you got to remember bull shots were not as well known as a thing back then.
No, we were younger and more innocent back then.
Yeah.
Oh, God. This is a little off topic. Phil, do you remember the bull shots for Rally Sport Challenge?
Yes.
When they were like what we would today call 4K almost.
And they were actually... Yeah,
this is rendered footage in-game.
Was it the machine that – it's not the machine that's running the game that's rendering them, though.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So you can imagine my, like, disappointment with the Dreamcast early on when the first two games I brought home that day were Blue Stinger and Trickstyle.
Yeah. See, I had a better day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I made more trips, but I had a better day.
Yeah.
So what I ended up doing is I ended up getting Sonic Adventure, and then the following year I got Shenmue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
and nothing between the two, or?
Oh, I had Jet Grind Radio. So
okay. Yeah. There's a fantastic game that came out later in the system's life.
As short-lived as it was.
Yeah. Yeah, there's still developers making games for it, by the way. So.
Year and a half, 2 years that... Yeah, I think Sega killing the Dreamcast was the best thing that ever could have happened for it, because it gave it a legacy that money can't buy.
Yeah.
And it's got developers still making games for it, so that's win-win.
Yeah.
If the Dreamcast had run through a full lifespan and just kind of petered out with the rest of the sixth generation...
Yeah.
It would not be remembered as favorably as it is today.
Yeah, because I mean we were there and we saw it, you know, after that first year launch.
Sega martyred it, they deified it really.
Yeah, because after that, I mean, if you were to really look at it objectively, the releases basically dropped off. Like,
yeah, around mid 2000, it was when it started to get really, really quiet.
Yeah,
Well, there was a couple of games that came out in that year, a few in 2001, but it didn't last very long. We did, however, get Phantasy Star Online, so yeah, that's always going
to be... Which is the other major thing about the Dreamcast, that is its biggest legacy.
Mm-hmm.
It basically pioneered console online play.
Yep. And I remember a group we had together in the Game Addicts Network forums getting together to play PSO.
Yeah.
So much back. Phil, did you join us for those games?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you were there. Teresa was there. Lee was there. And just a bunch of other people that we knew from back then. And, those were good times.
It was kind of a rotating crew because you could only have four in a party.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was great at the same time because there was always somebody there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And remember, Phantasy Star Online, that was Sonic Team.
Yep. Oh, it still is.
Yeah. And it proved that, they could do good quality stuff outside of Sonic or even that
particular... Especially outside of Sonic.
Yeah. goddamn, what the fuck? I mean, they did that, and then look at what happened to all the 3D Sonic games.
Yeah, they went to shit. Oh, crap.
Well, that Sonic team should have just been completely repurposed as the Phantasy Star team.
Yeah.
And then maybe fast-tracked Sonic Mania a little earlier than we got it.
Yeah.
September 9th, 1999. There were more trips involved, but I think I came out of it about as well as
one could hope for.
Yeah. What happened was, I've written an article about this way back in the AMP news days. I actually found them on archive, so I might post them up on Smashpad, but like 6 a.m., I joined my mom and my grandma on their way to work because I'd been saving up for the Dreamcast launch and, I was ready to get started. Unfortunately, my launch lineup information was informed by the first issue of Dreamcast Magazine that we featured on one of the first Gamer Mag Remembrances.
Mm-hmm.
How many of those games actually made launch?
half of them.
So I was leaving the house all stoked. Yeah, I'm going to be coming back with Marvel vs. Capcom and King of Fighters 98 and Virtua Fighter 3. That didn't happen.
Nope.
So I go to Fred Meyer, who was called at the time. I go in and I was like, hey, I'm here to buy a Dreamcast. Where are they? I was kind of surprised that I was the only one there. The electronics associate just, there's that pile right there. Go ahead and take one. So, okay, where are games? Well, we just have Sonic, but there's a bunch of them right there on this end cap. So Sonic was not in my plans at the time, so I just kind of left it at that and, grabbed my Dreamcast and headed home. Set it up, played some of the demos. Mall doesn't open until 10.
Mm-hmm.
So that was immediately where I fell in love with Flag to Flag Racing, which unfortunately did not appear anywhere in town on launch day.
Mm.
So I got a lot of mileage out of playing that demo, though. Just a couple laps of Gold Coast. That was still one of my favorite arcade racing experiences ever. Mm. But that was really the game that stuck out to me on the demo disc. And then probably played that two-thirds of the time I spent playing the Dreamcast until it was time to head up to the mall. And the mall, there's actually a crowd because people have been pre-ordering their systems and, you know, they have more games coming in than just Sonic.
Yeah. Mm.
So I get there and I actually meet up with my friend Dan, who had his pre-order there. And that was where I found out that you needed to buy a memory card. So, well, there goes my King of Fighters money. Actually, it was my Marvel vs. Capcom money because there was no way I wasn't buying KOF.
Yeah,
I thought it was going to be available. So I grab a VMU and the selection. This is where I'm starting to realize that the launch lineup is not what it was advertised to be. So whatever happens, I'm coming away with a fighting game, come hell or high water. Soul Calibur goes home with me as well, along with the VMU, an extra controller, and Final Fantasy VIII, because I didn't know what Final Fantasy VIII was going to be, and it came that day, too. I think that's something a lot of people forget, too, is that Final Fantasy VIII shared the launch with the Dreamcast, which really made for one of the most hype release days ever. Like, you could say that Majora's Mask shared a launch date with the PS2, but that didn't really add up the same way that Final Fantasy VIII plus the Dreamcast did.
Yeah.
In fact, Nintendo Nintendo even flinched in the at the 11th hour and told stores, sell them if you got them. Because they knew that they were going to get washed away in the PS2 hype if they didn't. But so anyway, I come home, VMU, extra controller, Soul Calibur, and Final Fantasy. I'm fucking happy right now. So I just I take another stop at Fred Meyer on the way home, see if anything else came in. Nothing really. So I'm tired at this point. I just want to go home and play my shit. Mom gets home from work while I'm playing Soul Calibur with one of my friends. Kind of surprised that that's all I came away with. And so I've got all this money left over because King of Fighters wasn't there, Marvel vs. Capcom wasn't there, Virtua Fighter wasn't there, and she's got to go to the store anyway. So as luck would have it, she was going to Fred Meyer. Like, well, the launch date wasn't all it was cracked up to be. If you're here's $50 while you're out there, you mind picking up Sonic? And sure, I wanted to see that game anyway, so... So she picked that up for me on her run to the store, and I took a bit of a nap after my friend left, and Mom got back with the Sonic, and when I woke up, we just both sat there playing that for a while, and really, really quality day overall, just playing the Dreamcast, and I still kept going back to that Flag to Flag demo, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that demo disc was what sustained a lot of people during those early
Oh, yeah. Days.
But, yeah, here's a lot of the shit that was supposed to come out today but didn't. Then in the coming days, I would sort of come to terms with the lack of fighting games that that actually made it to the launch. So, okay, I'll buy Hydro Thunder. Okay, I'll buy, you know, NFL Blitz. And that was how I got a lot of those games. But, yeah, I for having the launch lineup whittled down the way it was, the Dreamcast still had a really strong, fun, memorable first day.
Yeah.
And honestly, to this day, it defines to me what a launch should be like.
Yeah.
No stress, just go to the store, buy your stuff, go home, and enjoy it. And it's a shame that system launches are so undersupplied. And so stressful that you have to plan them out months in advance now if you want to even get in on a system.
Especially a Nintendo system.
Or a PlayStation. I mean, the only reason the Xbox One, you could make the case that it had a pretty good quality launch in terms of not being stressed out and having the games available is because Don Matrick undercut it with all the bullshit that
was that,
you know, and not enough people were informed about the 180 that it actually made Xbox Ones available on launch day, which you don't like seeing it happen that way, but at the same time, it still made for a pretty nice launch.
Yep.
Whereas the Wii U, the Switch, the PS4, those were all just riddled with scalpers and, you know, people hoarding pre-orders and, you know, that's not fun. That's not what a launch should be.
But, yeah, that didn't start really happening until the PS2.
Yeah, and I wrote about that as well in that whole series of launch retrospectives. The PS2 had some pretty fun common threads with the Dreamcast launch, but it was definitely the first signs of trouble as well.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I don't know. I'm glad it went as well as it did for myself, but I don't discount the experiences of people who weren't as lucky.
Yeah, mine was, well, as far as stress goes, it wasn't really that bad because I didn't have trouble getting anything. It was just what I ended up with wasn't quite what I was expecting. You know, I came and I went, I got my system. I didn't have any trouble with that. You know, they had... they didn't have Soul Calibur or Sonic or anything.
Yeah, you ended
else,
up with Trick Style, which is the first sign that something went very wrong.
Yeah, so I ended up with Trick Style and Blue Stinger, and I brought those home and played Trick Style.
So you got
for
a ton of use out of that fucking demo disc.
Oh yes.
Probably never left your system for 2 months.
Well, for at least the first week when I went back to the store and I was able to get Sonic and then Soul Calibur, then things were good. That tided me over until VF3 TB came out, and then Sega Rally 2 came out, and
Sega Rally 2.
Oh god, that game was so good. It wasn't as good as the arcade version, but it was still amazing. Yeah.
Well, it had so much more content, though.
Yeah.
Mm.
But, yeah, that's, you know, I'm always going to have positive memories about the Dreamcast.
Yes.
It's, you know, it's not a system that had treated me badly. So, yeah. Except for when the batteries in the VMU die. Mm. Yeah. Just, that makes them super irritating.
Yeah.
Yep.
But the nice thing about it is you could pull the batteries, you'd lose the functionality of the gaming on it, but you could still use it as a memory card.
Yeah, you could still use it as a memory card, but if you pull the battery, or if the battery dies, every time you start up the Dreamcast, that thing will beep loudly at you.
Yep. You definitely don't want to leave a dying battery in it, though, because corrupted data happened, and so first sign of trouble, pull the battery.
and
that might have been one of the things as I was talking about earlier that why it didn't take off.
Last thing you want is battery start leaking, and then your VMU no longer works because the PCB has turned green and been eaten away. So don't do that. But the Dreamcast is also still one of the most undervalued systems. So, you know, if you've been curious about it and you actually want to get one,
get a VGA cable too.
Get a VGA cable if you can find them. Actually, they make reproductions of that now, so you don't have to buy the
that's what I've got.
The original.
That's why I was talking about possibly streaming Flag to Flag.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, so you can pick up a Dreamcast for about $50 on eBay, and usually you can probably get a few games with that package. So.
And because it was such a good system, the player base is really knowledgeable about how to maintain them.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So if you're worried about maybe a system dying and not knowing how to bring it back, people are out there who can fix that.
Yeah,
they're not hard to find.
Yeah, there's two really common problems that the Dreamcast will develop. One of them is the PCB for the controller ports will wear over time. Basically, like the connections break and your controller ports stop working. That's not particularly hard to fix. There's actually replacement boards that you can get and slot in there, so you don't really have to worry about that too much. The other is the battery on the Dreamcast itself, which it tends to die and start leaking as well. But those are changeable as well. So you can even just, you know, take it out and not even bother with it. Yeah. So kind of like a Saturn. Yeah. It's kind of like Saturn. I mean, you do have to set your date every time you start the system. Well, every time the system loses power, but that's not so bad, I suppose. It's like the Xbox if you remove the clock capacitor. And the other common problem is the laser, which, you know, for any system that has a spinning disc, that's will eventually go.
Mm-hmm.
That's a problem. And lasers that could read GD-ROMs, yeah, those are probably the most difficult component to get. They're still findable, but yeah, you may want to get a couple of extra ones if you can find them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In case you have to swap them out. What else do we have to say about the Dreamcast?
Like I said, people who know how to maintain Dreamcasts are easy to find. Apparently Phil is one.
Oh, I'm just, I do a lot of reading and watch Luke Morse a lot. He's fixed quite a few of them.
Mm-hmm.
Good influence.
Yeah, so. What else have we got? I do want to talk about Jet Set Radio. Brandon mentioned it a bit, and it was easily one of the most stylish games that ever came out on that system.
It's basically the game credited with popularizing cell shading.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Backward compatible on the Xbox One.
Yep. Yep.
So what made the game, first of all, was it was really... Yeah, I mean, it was really just one of the most stylish games to ever be produced. It had an amazing soundtrack. It had a fantastic mechanic, the whole graffiti mechanic, which everybody who played it, that in itself was actually a bit of a controversy because graffiti is
illegal.
Yeah, and kind of a has been a major municipal problem for
years,
especially
years.
In the modern industrialized world for years and years.
And it was more so back at that time
than probably
any other point.
Hmm.
And so, of course, when the game comes out and you play it, of course, you get that disclaimer before the game even starts.
Yeah.
You know, please do not start tagging in real life. so on and so forth.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you actually get to play the game, and that's literally all you do.
Yeah, that's all you totally do.
Well, I mean,
you skate around.
Yeah, you skate around, and the skating mechanics in particular were really good. The whole grinding mechanic in particular, that was one of the most satisfying things. And you really learn how to manage your distance when you're playing that game, because it's kind of necessary, because you're on a time limit, and that time limit is pretty unforgiving.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's not even taking into account the matter of Onishima.
Oh, yes.
Those assholes.
Yeah, so the whole sort of thing with the game is that you're in sort of like a... kind of like in a graffiti war with like other street gangs, and then...
The Popo.
Yeah, and the Popo, led by this douchebag who's watched way too many cop shows. And it gets really bad,
too.
Well,
first off, this is a Japanese cop who is willing to open fire on minors.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, that's...
I mean, they make it clear in the game that it's a...
itself.
I mean, they make it clear in-game that it's a pellet gun, but...
Yeah, still.
It gets real, like, eventually the freaking cops go absolutely fucking mental, because eventually they start bringing out, you know, freaking tanks and...
Chemical weapons,
helicopters.
Yeah, because, like, these 14-year-old kids are real threats, you know?
and then Onishima comes in, the big Zaibatsu, huh?
No, the police chief.
Yeah.
And then, yes, police chief. And then the big Zaibatsu comes in. And then they suddenly start, well, fuck.
Yeah, shit gets bad after that.
Yeah.
So.
Did you know, now, you know you can tag Onishima, right?
Yep.
And if you tag him enough, he'll go away.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You just gotta get him in the back, and he's like, yep. Fuck!
Oh, he loses his shit.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's fun.
And, of course, and we also got to talk about the actual graffiti itself, because they got some pretty legit artists to design it.
Yeah. And they had a mechanic in there where you could import your own.
Yeah, where you could actually make your own.
Yeah.
I mean, they had everyone from frickin' Rob Zombie actually did some had his designs in there. I mean, that's how legit that game was.
Yeah. But, well, I'll point out during that that time in video gaming, Rob Zombie was everywhere.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, so good times. And then we should probably also mention DJ Professor K, who's amazing.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And serves as the story narrator for a good chunk of it. So.
That's it, radio!
And that soundtrack. Oh, God, that soundtrack.
Yeah. I still have that soundtrack and listen to it at work all the time.
And arguably, when they did the sequel on the Xbox, they kind of one-upped it.
Yeah, they actually managed to take the graffiti, the whole aspect, and actually streamlined it.
Yeah, well, it wasn't. They removed the need to do like directional sweeps and stuff. It was just basically pow 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 tag.
That would be a good game for them to introduce for the legacy Xbox backward compatibility.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Hear that, Microsoft? you got make that one happen. And yes. Maybe Sega GT 2002. That was actually that came on. Yeah, it was all right. And you can get them as one disc, which was kind of fun. Yeah.
I don't know
why they did that, but you could. So, yeah. So good memories for the Dreamcast all around.
Mm-hmm. It was also kind of the last bastion of arcade games for quite a while after that.
Yeah.
PS2 got off to a good start with arcade-style games, but that kind of petered out as it gave way to some first-person shooters and GTA-style games as you got closer to, you know, to those moving to the forefront. But
weirdly enough, first-person shooters never really became a thing in the arcades.
No, other than those rail shooters.
But. Yeah, I mean, which is weird because if you really think about it, if you did them right, those things would really work well in an arcade setting.
Don't blame it. They put Quake 2 there.
Yeah, they did.
Mm. Yeah. Well, there's a couple of them in the VR space now, VR arcades. So that's, I think it's just something that was, it's time and technology kind of precluded it from happening.
Mm.
But as far as like all of the fighting games, all of the racing games, that was, you know, your kind of quirky concept gimmick games, those kind of petered out after the Dreamcast for a while.
Yeah.
And, like, arcade racers are just now recovering.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, about halfway through the PS2's life cycle, we started to see the whole AAA problem start to surface.
Yeah.
With, you know, bigger budget games. We saw Call of Duty start to become popular. And then you started to see all these other companies want a piece of that money and the inevitable.
And then the Xbox 360 came out and.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was pretty much nothing but that.
Yep.
And the PS3. Yeah, same difference. So. But, yeah. So I guess, you know, we probably have a show for this week.
Yeah.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. So, yeah, go buy a Dreamcast if you haven't played one. It's well worth it.
VGA cables.
Yes.
And I've got to start shopping for VGA to HDMI.
Yeah, that's not hard to find. So, Alrighty. So, remind everybody that you can subscribe to the show at on Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Google Play, and your favorite RSS reader. You can also check us out at smashpad.com. We've got content coming up. We've got Madden has been reviewed and is up, and there's some other stuff going up.
We've also got our East 8 review, too.
Oh, that just posted a couple days ago. So, yeah, worth checking that out.
Tuesday cannot come soon enough.
Yeah, you probably hate Dan Rep right now, don't you? Because he's played it and you have it.
I've made many comments about his mother and her selling her body for money. So, yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, that totally did happen. So, and it's recorded, too.
And
so.
I'm just over here like, you know, I've got plenty to play that I'm not going to be too salty about it.
Anyways, so with that, I'm Filippo D'Onofrio.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And we'll see you next week.
We're sorry, Dan Reb.